America chronicles the rise of reggae with a collection of powerful pictures, including many previously unpublished, featuring Bob Marley, Peter Tosh, Money Wailer, Lee Scratch Perry, The Heptones, Inner Circle, Jacob Miller, Jimmy Cliff, Junior Mervin, Toots and the Maytals, George Harrison, Burning Spear, Third World, and more. The exhibition takes place from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. at the S Building Atrium, located at 1637 Bedford Avenue in Brooklyn. At 1:30 p.m., there'll be a reception, followed by a presentation and book signing by Ms. Gottlieb Walker. That's Wednesday, November 10th at Mega Evers College's S Building, 1637 Bedford Avenue in Brooklyn. For more information, call 718-270-4935. That's 718-270-4935.
Hello, Felipe Luciano here. You may know me as a last...
And the time is just about 7 p.m. Time for another edition of Off the Hook.
The telephone keeps ringing, so I ripped it off the wall. I cut myself while shaving, now I can't make a call. We couldn't get much worse, but if they could, they would. Oh, they live on for the best, expect the worst. I hope that's understood.
And a very good evening to you. The show is Off the Hook. Rob T. Firefly here with you in the studio. I am joined by Mike.
Hi.
And Dot Rhett.
Hello.
And on the phone, we should have Bernie S.
Greetings from Philadelphia.
And do we have Emmanuel on the phone?
Yeah, we got Emmanuel on the phone. What am I doing on the phone?
Yeah, what are you doing on the phone?
I'm going to buy you a watch, Emmanuel.
Yeah, you know, I have a watch. Thank you very much, Mike. But here's the thing. I left 60 miles away from New York City at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and I'm still not here. Oh, I'm close. I'm getting close. But apparently today is some kind of holiday where everybody decides to drive really slowly and inconveniently, and it's taken me over 4 hours to get 60 miles. So I'm sorry about that. I have all my notes next to me, but I don't think I'm going to risk my life by opening up envelopes and reading things on the air while I'm driving. Suffice to say, though, I am getting close because I'm at that point on the FDR Drive where there's an exit for the Brooklyn Bridge. That's only one lane, but everybody takes three lanes to use it. And the irony of that is I'm not going on that exit, so as soon as I pass that, I'll be able to go really fast and get there very soon. So enough about me. How are you guys?
I'm well. Are you're not traveling by horseback or anything?
No, I'm not.
Bernie, I believe you said you had a news story that you wanted to share with us.
Oh, well, I'm glad I'm in Philadelphia, not on a cruise ship. But
I'm glad, too. Cruise ships, I don't think they're really my thing.
No, I can't imagine why anyone would want to spend time on a cruise ship, frankly. I want to get to where I'm going. I don't want my journey to be on a cruise ship.
I'll tell you something, Bernie. I'd be better off on a cruise ship right now trying to get to New York City than on a car.
Hey, did you hear this? The Carnival Splendor cruise ship passengers, that's the ship that's stranded, 50 miles off the coast of New Jersey or something,
we're
off of California, I'm sorry, wrong ocean, the same continent, it just had the wrong ocean.
Six of one, half dozen the other.
They're being fed spam, so the Carnival Cruise Lines is spamming its customers right now.
I heard they requested.
Well, they didn't have any choice because all the engines went up in flames, so they had no refrigeration.
If the engines go up in flames, you can only eat spam.
Well, there was all they had no. The food was spoiled, so the Coast Guard actually dropped like thousands of pounds of food onto the ship. And all they had was spam. They're force feeding these people spam. I love it.
It's like a Monty Python sketch.
It's very much so like that. Well, Emmanuel was speculating earlier. We were discussing to have some fun with this. We could try to call the Carnival Cruise Line's ship. I got the telephone number. There's a website I found called dialacruise.com. And you go through some interesting menus. We may not want to go through all the final steps, because the final step requires you to pay something like $9 and change per minute. And you have to know the name of the passenger. But we could like go to the point where we enter a name of a passenger, like John Smith.
Bernie, I have a question. What if you think you know the name of the passenger, and they try to find the passenger, but they can't? Do you have to pay for that?
Well, I'm guessing it may be an automated system where you have to spell the passenger's name.
Well, that could be fun.
So do you want to try that?
What if the passenger's not in their room? Do you still have to pay?
That's a really good question.
I mean, whatever it costs a minute to leave voicemail, really not a good deal.
Well, I think we can get pretty close without having to pay anything. And it might be fun to hear what it sounds like to make a phone call through the Inmar. It uses the Inmarsat satellite.
Is that an 800 number?
No, it's actually, well, yeah, actually, no, yes, it is an 800 number, or it's a 732 area code number, your choice.
Well, I choose the 800 number because we can no longer make long-distance phone calls.
Oh, that's a WBI thing.
Yes.
Okay. Well,
hey, guys, guess what? Not only did I find parking on Wall Street, I found free parking on Wall Street.
Well, I guess that's what we get for our tax dollars.
Well, it's because it's so late that the parking meters have expired.
Here's a toll-free number if you want to give it a call, Mike.
Hold on. Let me write it down, yeah? If all our listeners call, will they overload the system?
We'll find out.
Oh, exciting.
Okay, it's actually 877.
Uh-huh.
225.
Yeah.
7447.
All right, well, let's try it.
I'm entering the building.
I'm here.
All right,
here.
Oh. Something's supposed to happen now, right?
Yeah, it takes a few seconds.
Okay.
You hear something. I just tried this a minute ago.
I have to say, not the most exciting number I've ever called.
Thank you for calling Maritime Telecommunications Network, your shore-to-ship connection to the Carnival Cruise Line vessels. This service is for contacting passengers aboard Carnival vessels only. In order to complete this call, you would need the name of the ship and the party you are trying to reach. If you do not know this information or are calling for any other reason than to speak to a passenger, please hang up and contact Carnival Cruise Lines at 1-800-CARNIVAL. Upon connection to the ship, this call will be billed at a rate of $9.50 per minute.
Oh.
You may pay for this call by using any of the following major credit cards: Visa, MasterCard, Discover, American Express, Diners Club, JCB, and Carte Blanche. Billing will begin upon connection to the ship's operator or automated system. Please make a selection from the following menu.
Press £1 for the Splendor.
That's it.
Press
£1
for the Exodus. Please enter your credit card number followed by the pound sign now.
I'm not going to give mine over the air.
Well, that's no fun.
I don't have enough credit for $9.50 a minute. Is this it? Can we go further?
I think that's probably where we can go.
What?
Just put a fake number in. See what happens. Like, use your credit card. Use one of our.
I'm sorry. Your credit card number is incorrect.
Please enter your credit card number, followed by the pound sign now.
Hey, that's my credit card number.
It's my luggage combination, I don't know. I think that was 16 digits that I put.
Well, it probably does that PIN code.
Please enter your 4-digit expiration date, month and year only. For example, 0...
An error has occurred while processing your payment. Please hang up and call again.
I wonder why.
What did I miss here?
You missed us trying to call the Carnival Splendor.
For free.
And failing in a splendorous manner.
Well, as long as you failed splendorously, that's what matters.
Oh. Also, I loosened a couple of bolts on your chair there, so be careful.
Okay, that's fine. No problem. I am so sorry. I really thought I gave enough time, but occasionally this happens in New York, where everything just sort of slows down and nobody gets anywhere at any particular speed, and nobody knows why. It wasn't even on the radio as a traffic congestion point. It was just everybody was going really, really slowly. So,
the good thing about this is the next time we're late for the show, you can't say anything.
Well, yeah, that's true. I can't, but I will. Well, it's good to see everybody. Good to finally make it here. Wow. Okay.
Good to have you here.
Thank you. Thank you very much. This is Off the Hook, where you never know what's going to happen next.
We know that. We've been here for 10 minutes.
It's been 10 minutes. Well, that's amazing. I've got a bunch of stories here, a bunch of interesting things. You've just covered the cruise ship. Have you covered anything else?
No, that's it.
Okay.
Apparently there's traffic on the east side or something.
We got that story, too.
All right.
Yeah, and all throughout Brooklyn, Nassau, and Queens, and yeah. So Google is now starting wars, I understand. Have you heard about this?
Oh, yeah, in Central America.
Yeah,
right?
Central America. They apparently retraced the border between two Central American countries, and this is after a territory dispute developed. Here's what happened. Google had updated the digital border between Nicaragua and Costa Rica with new data from the U.S. State Department, and that follows a dispute that developed between those two countries over a piece of land near the San Juan River on the Caribbean coast. A Nicaraguan official cited the Google Maps version of the border as justification for a reported raid of the area, according to the local news. Yes, they raided the area because of what Google Maps said. That's literally the story here. Now, Google says it is our goal to provide the most accurate, up-to-date maps possible. Maps are created using a variety of data sources, and there are inevitably going to be errors in that data. We work hard to correct any errors as soon as we discover them. And Google blames the State Department, saying they're the ones who provided the faulty data in the first place. But it's just amazing to me that countries are looking at Google Maps and saying, hey, that's our land. We're going to invade you now.
Now, I know that the Nicaraguan army is not as well-funded as some armies, but and the Costa Rican army doesn't exist, so they're not well-funded at all. But can't they afford a paper map?
Well, they get outdated so quickly, though. You know, Google Maps is up to the moment. Maybe something happened that they weren't informed about.
This whole thing just implies that, you know, Googling something doesn't return the indelible, inarguable answer, and that's troubling to me.
Yeah, absolutely. Sometimes things aren't quite right in Google land.
On the other hand, can we use this to settle border disputes? Like, there's this silly argument between Denmark, which owns Greenland, and Canada about some uninhabited island. Can we just look at Google and be like, all right, whatever Google says, that's it. You have to
Denmark
stop arguing now.
Owns Greenland? Is that really how you want to say it?
Yes.
They own Greenland. They own the people there. They own everything.
They own the territory, and it's a colony of Denmark, yes.
I think some of our Greenland listeners might have something to say about the...
I'm not saying it's the way things should be. I'm saying it's the state of affairs in Greenland.
What I think is interesting is that Google relied on U.S. State Department data when there probably are other views of where the border should be. Like, if you ask the government of Morocco where their border is between them and the Western Sahara, the territory called Western Sahara, I'm sure you get a different answer than if you ask the U.S. State Department or if you ask the people in Western Sahara. So, you know, whose information should Google be putting on, you know, to trace these borders out? It's interesting.
Absolutely. Well, now, we had this election last week. I know we're still reeling from that. But here's a little side benefit that a lot of folks out there, I think, will be very interested in. We've been talking a lot about net neutrality over the years and the importance of net neutrality to the Internet. Anybody here like to describe what net neutrality is in a couple of words?
Net neutrality is the idea that Internet carriers, so the phone company, the cable company usually, shouldn't be allowed to charge content providers more for faster delivery of their content.
An example of that, perhaps, of how it's being abused.
So it could be the case that, you know, whatever your cable company decides that, like, they don't like Google and they want you to use Bing, maybe Microsoft gives them some money, so they could block...
Did you say Microsoft? Did you
Microsoft.
Just say
Microsoft.
It sounded like you said micro suck.
No. I would never call the good people of
I mean, I've seen people spell it with a dollar sign, but I've never heard anybody stoop to that level.
How would you pronounce it with a dollar sign on the radio?
You can't, which is why you'd say something like micro suck instead.
I did not intend to say anything but Microsoft.
The gloves are off. Okay.
No, the gloves are on.
Actually, he is wearing gloves.
Yeah, he is wearing gloves. Why are you wearing gloves in the studio?
Because they're very bulky and I don't have big enough pockets to put them in.
Okay, I'm not going to even ask why you have them in the first place, but continue with your wonderful net neutrality.
So the point is that Microsoft could pay your phone company some money so that you can't access Google, or so that you access Google more slowly, or vice versa. Google pays some money and then you can't go to Bing.
So if you want the net to continue to work for you, regardless of what it is you're trying to connect to at equal speeds.
Net neutrality is how the internet has always always been since it started. And the idea of net neutrality legislation is that we want to keep it that way, and we don't want to give the carriers the option to change it.
Okay, and the good news is that in the House and Senate right now, there are 95 candidates before the election who pledged support for net neutrality. And as of last Tuesday, every single one of them lost. That's right. Every single damn one of them did not win. And that could mean that net neutrality is all but dead, thanks to the American people. I don't think you can blame anybody else.
How did this happen?
I have many theories, but I think it's people not caring enough to do something.
Support of net neutrality is not a universal position, but it's not a fringe position. Like, mm-hmm.
But it tends to be the position of people that are on one side of the political aisle, and
yeah,
that side took a beating.
Not every person, left of center, lost their election.
Well, yeah, but the ones who are least progressive tended to win the most, I think. And net neutrality, I guess, is one way of measuring that. It'll be interesting to see what happens in the years ahead. Bernie, what do you think about all this?
Well, I think there's no chance of getting any legislation through the current House, which was just taken over by the Republicans, getting any legislation voted for that would require net neutrality. So it comes down to, a court decision. It comes down to a judicial thing, whether the FCC is going to be allowed to mandate that carriers practice net neutrality. I think the big dispute is whether the nuclear option, as it's called, for the FCC is for it to declare internet service providers as what are called Title II telecommunications providers. Title II is like a telephone company or something. If the FCC reclassifies internet service providers as Title II communications carriers, then they have to practice net neutrality. But that's the nuclear option. There are some situations where you need to do some traffic shaping, and it would prevent ISPs from doing that. So we'll have to see how this plays out. It's going to be interesting, but it doesn't look good for any legislation being passed to require net neutrality.
Unbelievable. Well, that's part of the fallout of what happened last Tuesday. I'm sure we'll be hearing all kinds of other things as well. Maybe this will wake people up a little bit to the importance of these things. Okay, interesting news about, we've heard about the drones that are being used overseas to fight the bad guys and all that kind of thing, but do you know that in addition to finding terrorist leaders in the hills of Pakistan, that these little drones can be used to spy on, well, any of us, really? Personal drones, smaller private versions of the infamous Predator, are the next hot technology for people looking to track celebrities, cheating lovers, or even wildlife. It could be a dream tool for the paparazzi. Several personal drones are scheduled for completion next year. These are, I guess, they look like little helicopters.
How big?
I guess about head size, it looks like.
I think I would notice if, like, a head were following me around.
It's a little bigger than head size, if you can look at that picture there.
I can see the picture, and I would definitely notice that. It looks like the things that we've seen, there were some at Hope, actually, and they're at the German conferences as well.
Yeah, the things that hackers like to play with that, sort of like helicopters, but they rise up out of the ground. Well, not out of the ground, but off the floor and hover. But they make noise, you can hear them. But if they're up high enough, maybe you won't hear them. Maybe you won't see them then. And if you can control them and watch where people go and have a telephoto lens, who knows what you could see?
I guess.
Yeah. Now, I picture this as something that every parent is going to want to have to watch their kid as they walk in that dangerous zone between the house and the school bus stop.
It would give whole new meaning to the term helicopter parents.
Exactly. Hovering parents, I believe. Helicopter parents, hovering parents, yes, all that kind of thing. Using the device's onboard camera and thermal imaging technology, the operator is able to pick up the suspect through his body heat and direct foot patrols to his location. This is if cops are using it, which apparently they are. The drone measures 3 feet between the tips of its 4 carbon fiber rotor blades. It uses unmanned aerial vehicle technology known as UAV, originally designed for military reconnaissance. The battery-powered device can have a range of cameras attached to its main body, including CCTV surveillance or thermal imaging cameras. It's designed to hover almost silently above crime scenes and send live footage to officers on the ground. But the unit can also perch and stare from a solid platform, allowing the operator to capture hours of footage from a hidden vantage point. This is scary because, you know what, this is going to happen. The military always develops this kind of technology before they use it on the civilians. And I see this as actually being something they're going to be doing, something they're going to be using quite a bit.
There's a limitation, though, on this technology, and that is these little small helicopters require battery power or a gasoline engine. In any case, you're not going to be able to have a drone helicopter flying around for more than a few minutes without running out of either battery power or fuel, because otherwise it's just too heavy and it won't get off the ground. So I'm sure they're working on that, but we have to be limited to very short flights for the time being.
Now, what about if solar panels? What if would they possibly be able to top off its power supply and extend its range with a good sunny day?
Not enough. It's a good question.
Why are we trying to help them?
No, you know they've thought about this, so I'm throwing out the question for the listeners.
Uh-huh. Yeah, well, all I want to know is, when are we going to see the first of these hovering above us? And
We've seen it. It was at Hope.
No, I don't mean when we're playing with it. I mean when the police are using it and they're spying on us.
I see.
Or when hovering parents are spying on us.
Didn't we have listeners calling in several years ago warning us about these dragonfly these surveillance things that look like dragonflies?
We always have listeners calling and warning us about things, and some of them exist and some of them don't. This might have been one of the things that existed. Rob?
I think it could be worth asking our friends from Differware if they could maybe work on a butterfly net with a Faraday cage, because I would love one of these for my collection.
Well, you know, I don't see anything wrong with capturing one if one is following you. It's just like if somebody puts a device on your car to monitor your whereabouts, you can take that device. You can do whatever you want with it.
Except that FBI comes and yells at you and...
Yeah. Yeah, well,
you get in all kinds of trouble.
Get yelled at by a lot of people, and they're just going to have to deal with it.
Happened just a few weeks ago.
Yes. Voltaire is here. Voltaire, you know the show starts at 7, right?
Yeah, I was pressing the door close button in the elevator. And it wasn't
we
working.
All make an attempt to get here on time. It's important that everybody do the same thing. It's just don't mean to do the on-air lecture thing, but I feel in the interest of fairness.
After the show, I'm going to the drugstore. I'm buying everyone a $10 watch.
Okay. How have you been? It's been a while since you've been here.
Yes. Been good, thanks.
That's good.
I was just going to say that if we have RFID chips in our passport, we should be able to break them too.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it should be. If it's in your hands, if it's in your possession, if it's something that you have bought or own or quote-unquote bought or own, you should be able to do whatever you want with it. It seems only fair to me. And that goes for the insides of cars. That goes for your DVD players. That goes for your computers. That goes for anything that is yours. You should be able to do whatever you want with it, short of killing somebody with it. But that's a whole different issue. Thought Red.
Oh, well, you know, they found a very nice way around that. They're not really – you don't really own it. You just, given permission to use
– Yeah, you're leasing
their
it.
Property.
License.
Right. Oh, yeah. A license to use. I don't buy it.
You take off the plastic, you – sign the license.
There's so much stupidity around us. I mean, I'm not just referring to last Tuesday. I'm referring to just all the different uses and ineffective uses of technology. This happened to me yesterday, right? I was in a drugstore. This is a bad time of year for me. I have allergies like you would not believe. So I needed to get Claritin or a equivalent brand. I'm not going to say I got one particular brand or another, but you know what I'm talking about. Apparently, you can use Claritin or its similar brands to start a meth lab. Did you know that? I would never have guessed.
The ingredient in Sudafed is the main one.
Yeah,
Claritin D, not regular Claritin.
Claritin D, right? Yeah. And that's the one they keep behind the counter now. And I, until the federal government said that, I wouldn't have even thought of starting a meth lab with my supply. My supply ran out, so I had to get more. So I went to the drugstore and I said, okay, please, I'd like a pack of 15. And they said, well, we don't have 15, we only have 10. I'm like, okay, well, give me two packs of 10. I'm sorry, sir, you can't get that many. As if I was overdosing or something like that. I wanted 15, and they wouldn't give me two packs of 10 because they didn't have 15. That was just silly in and of itself. They said the computer will reject that. You know, a human being doesn't enter into it. The computer will reject it. And then the next step was showing them ID. And I showed them my ID, and they looked at it, and the computer rejected my ID because it was expired. I gave them my expired license by accident. And I asked them, what difference does it make if my license is expired? I'm still the same person, but the computer is rejecting it. The computer won't process it. How many times have you heard that phrase? The computer says no. The computer does not accept this. And obviously, a human being would. For a human being, 20 is no different than 15. I mean, not significantly different. It's not like you're starting a meth lab with 20 pills. And a license that expired a couple of months ago, how is that any different than a license that is still good if you're not driving? You're the same person, same address, same everything, same picture. It's just it's incredible silliness. And it's something that I run across all the time of people that are kind of chained to technology, and they say that because the computer says this, I can't make any exception. That's just the way it is. Those are the rules.
Manual.
Yes.
I wonder what would happen if you provided a valid ID that the computer accepted, and you bought your 10 tablets
mm-hmm.
of Claritin D or whatever, and then you left the store and came back 5-10 minutes later.
Oh no, I'm flagged. I'm flagged as a troublemaker already. I can't buy. I don't think I can buy Claritin anywhere. I don't know how 10 is supposed to last you. You can't really.
My point is, does the system that they enter your ID information into track how much Claritin D you buy, and will it flag you if you try to buy it again, like a few hours later?
Well, if I designed that system, I would say it's no good unless it did that. I mean, it wouldn't make sense to just block you in one store. But you know what? Maybe I'll try to buy more tonight and see what happens. It could be a whole big thing. The other question I had for them, and this is fascinating. I asked, well, what happens if I don't have a driver's license? What do you do then? And the answer was, you have to have state-issued ID. It's the law. I didn't know that. A drugstore clerk informed me that it's now the law that you have to have ID on you at all times in this country. Isn't that a kick in the ass?
Not true.
I know it's not true, but that's what people believe. And when people believe things that aren't true, sooner or later they become true. I.e. last Tuesday.
Thank God they're at the drugstore, not cops that don't know the law.
Yeah, well, they're next on the list. Drugstore clerks number one, cops number two, of people who don't know the law. So anyway, that's just, I'm sure we've all had these kinds of experiences where we've come up against ignorami, is that the right use of the word, who are in control, and they have a computer, and they think that they know what's going on, when in actuality they're more crippled than anybody insofar as doing things that make sense.
On the ID, on that ID question about your mandatory thing, if you have a driver's license in a state or commonwealth of the United States, I think all of them require that if you move to another state, that like within 30 days or some time period, you must then register yourself as being a driver in that state. But if you're not a licensed driver, then there's no such requirement because they can't legally force you to get an ID just to exist as a person.
Well, okay. So what is your solution then? If I need that particular kind of drug, how do I get it if I don't have a driver's license?
Well, to get through their hoops, which are to surmount their claim that you must have one, which is not legally true, you would have to get one. But you have to pay. The state IDs are not free. You have to pay money. That's why they have laws. That's why there's no requirements at most states to get a driver's license or straight state ID to vote, unless they make the IDs for free. And the states don't want to give them away for free because they want to make money.
Absolutely. All right. Here's a very disturbing story that I saw on Salon.com, written by one Glenn Greenwald. In July of this year, U.S. citizen Jacob Applebaum, a researcher and spokesman for WikiLeaks, he's the guy who also gave our keynote at The Next Hope, was detained for several hours at Newark Airport after returning from a trip to Holland. In fact, that was the trip he took after Hope, I believe. He hightailed it out of the country and then came back afterwards. He had his laptop, cell phones, and other electronic products seized, all without a search warrant, without being charged with a crime, and without even being under investigation, at least to his knowledge. He was interrogated at length about WikiLeaks and was told by the detaining agents that he could expect to be subjected to the same treatment every time he left the country and attempted to return to the U.S. Sounds familiar. Days later, two FBI agents approached him at a computer conference he was attending in New York. Oh, wait, that was before Hope? Wow. That must be our computer conference, right? Yeah, it has to be.
No, it must be something else.
I think they mixed this up, because I don't think he was detained before Hope, was he? I thought he was detained after Hope. All right.
After it's the Debian conference.
Maybe it's another computer conference in New York. He came to New York and didn't let us know. Mm-hmm. Oh. Well, anyway, two FBI agents approached him at that conference and asked to speak with him again. To date, he has never been charged with any crime or even told he's under investigation for anything. This was clearly a thuggish attempt by federal officials to intimidate any American citizen involved with or supporting WikiLeaks. That campaign of intimidation is now clearly spreading to supporters of Bradley Manning. Last Wednesday, November 3rd, David House, a 23-year-old researcher who works at MIT. Wow, there really are people named House, just like on TV. A 23-year-old researcher who works at MIT was returning to the U.S. from a short vacation with his girlfriend in Mexico and was subjected to similar and even worse treatment. House's crime, he did work helping set up the Bradley Manning Support Network, an organization created to raise money for Manning's legal defense fund. And he has now visited Manning three times in Quantico, Virginia, where the accused WikiLeaks leaker is currently being detained. Like Applebaum, House has never been accused of any crime, never been advised that he's under investigation, and was never told by any federal agents that he's suspected of any wrongdoing at all. Last Wednesday, House arrived at Chicago's O'Hare Airport, and his flight was met in the concourse by customs agents who examined the passports of all deplaning passengers until they saw houses, at which point they stopped. He was then directed to customs, where he and his girlfriend's bags were extensively searched. After the search was complete, two men identifying themselves as Homeland Security officials told House and his girlfriend they were being detained for questioning and would miss their connecting flight. House was told that he was required to relinquish all of his electronic products and thus gave them his laptop, cell phone, digital camera, and USB flash drive. It says UBS flash drive, but I assume it's USB. And that notice actually is something you will see whenever you enter the country on a land border as well, and lucky enough to get detained and brought into that little room. They say you are required to hand over all electronic equipment upon demand. My latest incident, it wasn't demanded, but while you're required to hand it over, you are not required to give them additional information. In fact, you don't even have to answer their questions. The document he received itemizing his seized property is on Salon.com. If you want to go to that website, you can look over all the firsthand information. He was also told to give the agents all of his passwords and encryption keys, which he refused to do. Bravo. House was then taken to a detention room by two armed agents, and on his way there, he passed by a room in which several individuals were plugging various instruments into his laptop and cell phone. The two agents proceeded to question him for 90 minutes as to why he was visiting Manning in prison, what work he did to support the Manning campaign, who else was involved in the Manning support group, and what his views were on WikiLeaks. He was told that he would not receive his laptop or camera back, and the agents kept it. To date, he has not received them back very well, may never. When he told them that he had roughly 20 hours of source code work in his laptop and would like to save it or email it to a saved site, they told him he could not do that. He subsequently learned that that one of the agents actually was an FBI Joint Terrorism Task Force agent and not part of Homeland Security. Now, according to this article, what's going on here is obvious. The federal government has the authority to conduct border searches of people entering the country that are far broader than those inside the country, and such searches require no search warrant. The government has that power in order to prevent security threats from entering the country. But here, they are clearly exploiting and abusing it in order to conduct investigative searches, which would ordinarily require a search warrant, but for which they have no basis to obtain one. And that's really what's happening here. They're cheating. They're going around the system, and they're abusing their power. We've seen it so many times before, and it's particularly disturbing in this case. Somebody who simply is involved in the Bradley Manning support group is being harassed like this, and probably will be harassed every time he enters the country.
Emmanuel,
yes,
I foresee something. This is a dangerous thought, but it's entirely possible, and our government has done worse things. To declare WikiLeaks a terrorist organization,
mm-hmm.
A very recent Supreme Court ruling said that there is already a federal felony called material support of a terrorist organization. If and the United States has declared Hamas or Hezbollah rather a terrorist organization, and their television network Al Manar, we aired a story a few years ago about somebody was providing just satellite TV receivers to watch Al Manar, and he was sentenced to several years in federal prison just for simply providing people with access to a TV channel of what the U.S. government called a terrorist organization. So if U.S. declares WikiLeaks a terrorist organization, any person who's donated money, who after that law is passed, donates money to WikiLeaks or does any kind of just minor support, writing code or a spokesperson, any of those people could be immediately arrested on felony charges. And that would be a nuclear option for the U.S. government, but it wouldn't surprise me if this happened.
Okay, I'm going to lay this out. Best practice for anyone traveling overseas, no matter how much interest there may or may not be in you, don't keep your only copy of anything on your laptop or other mobile devices. While you're overseas, before you take your flight back, upload everything back to a safe website, a web server, FTP, you know, whatever. Transmit it back to yourself so you can pick it up when you get home. Then you can restore your laptop to, you know, from a live CD or anything else. You know, have it fresh and empty and clean, and there will be nothing for people to find on it.
And you know, every time something like this happens, I feel it's important to strike back in whatever way you can. And in this particular case, this is a story we might not have been talking about tonight had this not happened. But I'd like to give out the web address for the Bradley Manning Support Group, which is www.bradleymanning.org. That's BradleyManning.org. And there you can donate. You can help out in all sorts of different ways. And I'd like to think if every time something like this happens, 10 more people join as a result and help out when ordinarily they might not have heard about it. I think that's a good statement every time we see injustice. But I'd also like to ask those of you who travel, have you considered what might happen to you entering this country and having somebody demand your laptop, and not only your laptop, but your passwords and encryption keys and things like that? When Kyle and I were at the border in Vermont a few weeks ago being interrogated, I knew that was a possibility that might happen, and I was I'm pretty certain in my mind. I can't say until it actually happens. I'm pretty certain in my mind I would be obstinate in refusing to give them this information, and refusing to give them a password or any kind of passphrase or anything like that. Hardware is one thing; they can take whatever they want forcibly if they choose. But as far as actually getting information out of you, that's something they simply do not have the right to. But have we all thought this through as to what we would do in such a situation? And maybe I'm taking it too far. Is it something that maybe I shouldn't be afraid to give them? Dotret?
In my personal opinion, just based on the principles of what this country is supposed to be based on, you know, you shouldn't have to say that. And, you know, if people start getting scared and they start giving in because they're an authority figure is talking to them, and this does happen a lot. People are scared and they'll comply. The result eventually happens is they think, okay, I can do this, and they do more and more and more. Mm-hmm. And before you know it, you're living in a country you'd rather not live in.
And people think that because they say you have to give me your password, that's the law, that you do have to give them your password. And then before you know it, people believe that is true, just like people believe that you have to carry ID on you at all times. It's perception. And it's pulling the wool over people's eyes.
There's one other thing I'd like to add to, based on what you just said, is, you know, a good practice is to at least know something about the law. You know, if you're going to travel, then maybe you should look into, you know, what the border officials are allowed and not allowed to do in both the country you're coming to and coming from.
Well, that's where I profess a little ignorance here, because actually I'm not sure, Bernie, maybe you can answer this. Is it in fact the law? Can they do this?
Can they do what exactly?
Can they demand your password? Are you required to give them your password?
You are not required to, but that doesn't mean they can't give you a hard time. Now, if you're asked to testify before a grand jury, and you don't provide it, you could be found in contempt of court, because in a grand jury they gotta provide you with the immunity and that sort of thing. So it's a gray area. There's not been any court testing of this. I hope there's a test of this.
I have a feeling I'm going to be the test at some point. I just have that feeling. It just seems to be moving in that direction. Well, the other thing, and this is something that I believe Jacob Applebaum did, was simply not have anything on him that was vital. Basically, you can transfer files in a number of different ways. You can mail things separately. You don't have to have all of your information on you so that even if they do take things, you won't be hurt by it. Of course, it's always fun to make them think you have all kinds of things on you and have them waste a lot of time. That's
They don't really have good senses of humor in that department.
They wouldn't be the ones laughing. We would be. And as they struggle for years to crack your encryption scheme to see your I don't know, digital copies of National Geographic that you have stored, who knows?
Hey, I don't want them getting that
encrypted, Rob.
I think if you got an extra USB thumb drive, I think people should just put like random data on there and then encrypt it. And then bring it through, and then give that to them,
and name it all kinds of things too, like targets.txt or something,
or
targets.pgp. I guess is what you have to name it.
Really make them earn their pay trying to make something out of it.
Yeah,
there's a mode in Emacs, I forget what it's called, but it lets you do like scary information, and it automatically generates it. Like there's a scary buzz alert, like terrorist bomb and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. This is different than unnecessarily frightening people with stupid jokes in airports and things like that.
They're not this, people; they're TSA.
Yeah. I'm not even addressing that, but I'm talking about people overreacting when they hear somebody make a stupid joke about bombs or something like that. Yeah, I can sort of understand that, but this is for people that have invaded your privacy. They've gotten to a point they should not be at, and they're seeing things that are going to make them wet their pants in excitement. You know what? The gloves are off there too, and you can do things like this, I think, with justification, Rob.
And there's a lot of creep there because as our dependence on gadgets and technology grows, I think most people don't realize exactly how much they're giving up. You give the password to your phone or your laptop, and that's everything. Your whole life could be in this box. I mean, if it were 30 years ago, and to get on a plane, you had to not only give them your written diary and written address book, but copies of every letter and parcel that you've sent. Mm-hmm. You know, in your life and all your family photos and everything like
and
that.
Imagine if our government wasn't as nice as it is. Imagine if it was a nasty government, maybe even a dictatorial government. All kinds of horrible things they could do. Imagine this in the hands of the Nazis, this kind of technology. And you have to think that way because every government at some point is going to go in that direction and you're giving them all this power. How are they going to misuse it? That's why we have to know how to misuse technology before it gets misused so that we can not give too much away in situations like this. You're listening to Off the Hook. We're going to take phone calls, 212-209-2900. Love to hear views of people out there. And while we're wandering around inside the airport, there's a story that came out this week about those new airport scanners. I understand JFK has the full-body scanners. That's what I'm told. They're one of the airports. And in fact, I'm going out of JFK later this year, and that'll be interesting to see what happens there. But apparently, there are all kinds of safety questions now, in addition to privacy questions. A bunch of people. Let's see, UCSF, which is what is that again? You perked up like you had an answer for me.
UCSF.
Yeah. UCSF colleagues, but that doesn't say in the story what UCSF is.
Is that the union of like stewardesses or?
Well, they wrote a letter to.
The pilots union.
Yeah, the president's science advisor. There's no indication what UCSF is. Asking for a more thorough look at the risks of exposing all these airline passengers to X-rays. Ionizing radiation, such as the X-rays used in these scanners, have the potential to induce chromosome damage. Which can lead to cancer. The San Francisco group thinks both the machine's manufacturer, which, does anybody know the name of the manufacturer?
GE?
No, it's got a really cool name.
Diebold? Acme?
No.
L3?
No. Rapiscan. Yeah. Rapiscan. And government officials have miscalculated the dose that the X-ray scanners deliver to the skin, where nearly all the radiation is concentrated. The stated dose, about 0.2, I've never said this word in my life, microsieverts? Did I say it right? Microsieverts, which is a medical unit of radiation, is averaged over the whole body, said members of the UCSF group. But they maintain that if the dose is calculated as what gets deposited in the skin, the number would be higher, though how much higher is unclear. The point is, they don't know. They don't know the true risk here, and that's yet another reason to avoid these things and go for the groping instead, because that's what you're going to get if you don't go through the machine.
They've apparently upgraded the amount of groping that you get.
They're going to do a lot of groping in places that you'd rather not be groped, I understand. But you know what? I'd rather suffer that indignity than suffer the silent indignity and not know the effects of this for years down the road. And basically,
apparently there's two kinds of machines, and only one kind of machine does this, and the other kind doesn't. But it's kind of irrelevant.
Was it a placebo machine?
No. They have different kinds of radiation, only one of which is potentially harmful. But
well, why don't they use the unharmful one in both then?
The government doesn't care about you.
Uh-huh.
But you know, they're looking at pictures of you naked, and if you decline to be looked at naked, then they grope you. It's kind of not a good choice.
Well, at least with groping, they don't store the pictures.
In their memories, they do. In their memories. 212-209-2900 is our telephone. What's all this tape on the phone? Every single line is broken?
I don't think so. I think someone just bought some tape.
Okay. Well, I'm going to remove the tape if these lines are working. Let's take a phone call. 212-209-2900. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Hi. I want to talk about the machine.
Go ahead. You're on the air.
How can you x-ray all the suitcases that goes into the cargo of the plane? This is any of the suitcase can carry a bomb. I travel all around the world, especially in Asia. They don't check anything, and I virtually doing anything.
Yeah, in fact, there was a bomb a couple of weeks ago on apparently unscanned luggage in the guise of a printer toner.
Well, that was it.
But in Asia, they don't check anything physically or the suitcases. How this country will be safe? And I can tell you, anybody from Asia can carry a bomb in the luggage and be a martyr and die. This is one thing. And second thing is...
Well, they don't have to be a martyr if they don't get on the plane.
I mean, they will blow up with the plane, with everybody. Put the bomb in the suitcase and they get on top and they'll be dying. And then, second thing is, it is good that they do all these, but the best way to do it, travel naked with underwear and and a tie.
Uh-huh.
Isn't that the best thing to do?
It could be the underwear bomb, so you can't even wear underwear.
I like the guy who traveled with a big mask on and pretended to be an 80-year-old guy, and he was actually a 20-year-old Asian guy that looked nothing like the other.
Let me get to the real point. The real point is, in Muslims, it was the burqa, and those people who wear the burqa, they can be a terrorist, a possible terrorist, anywhere in the world, because get a huge dress and it can hide anything, and if you want to tell them anything against it, they're going to say it's a hate crime. How do you handle that?
Well, we're moving into some murky territory here. I'll give Dot Red a chance for this one.
Well, yeah, obviously there's some areas that we probably just don't want to touch, but very simply,
like, I'll touch them. It's just we don't have enough time to touch them.
If you walk through a machine that uses these millimeter, whatever kind of radiation, it doesn't matter what you're wearing, they'll see right through it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and unless you don't want, you said that if you don't go through the machine, they will grope you, in which case you have a choice, and if you don't like it, then you can't travel.
Right.
And,
okay.
Yeah.
All right. Let's move on to another call then. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
I have a caller ID question.
You have a caller ID question? Go ahead.
Sir, okay. Now, I know that, my line is blocked, so if I call somebody on a cell phone, it shows up as a private call.
Right, you have caller ID blocking installed.
Right, but if you call the cops or you call Land's End, they must be an alternate mechanism.
Land's End?
Yeah, you know, like if you call up any of the 800 numbers or...
Oh, okay, yeah, because that uses ANI technology, not caller ID technology, different technology.
Question, which actually really surprised me. I have a friend who's in India, and I went to... I'll listen to the answer off the air. I went and bought a $10 phone card,
mm-hmm.
and I called him in India from my home phone, and he answers the phone, and he says, "Oh, hi," and he calls me by my name, and I said, "How'd you know who it is?" And he said, "I'm looking at my cell phone that I rented here in India. Your phone number shows up."
Mm-hmm.
So the ANI goes through phone cards?
It depends how they have it set up. ANI can be transmitted through any phone call. It is transmitted, but it can be displayed on depending on if they pass that data through to the end user,
but
end customer.
Isn't that a little domestic phone calls, your phone number doesn't show up except to, like, you know, Land's End or Victoria's Secret or something.
Mm-hmm.
But if you call any third world country and somebody has a cell phone, the number's going to show
up?
Well,
it doesn't happen all the time. It depends on how they actually use the technology, how they're set up. It's probably not intentional. It's probably something they just overlooked. But, yeah, this kind of thing happens all the time. Rob?
Yeah, that's pretty much a consequence of, you know, we have control, you know, I'm sorry. Our companies have control over our phone lines in this country, but once you hop off of that and onto someone else's system in some other country, you're playing by their rules.
Yeah, but you know, even in this country, there are instances where that happens. I know of situations where if you call a particular phone number and then that phone number transfers you someplace else, if you are receiving that phone call, it doesn't matter if the person calling the first number has blocked their number. Your number will still get transmitted because, for some reason, the next company is using ANI to transmit the number and not caller ID data. So it happens all the time. That dialing that *67 before your call might make you think you're protecting your privacy. It doesn't. It really doesn't.
Yeah, and that's related to what I was saying, because when you go through something like a phone card company or a business's private phone system, once again, you're playing by the rules of whoever owns that equipment. And so some of them will take your ANI, step it down to caller ID, and pass it on.
Absolutely. 212-209-2900. Let's take another phone call. And good evening. You're on Off the Hook. Oops, I guess you're not. Hang on. Let's take a call over here. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook. Go ahead.
Yeah, hello.
Hi.
You know, this is classic when people admit to things they didn't do. Frankly, there was a show on Frontline last night about four guys, called the Norfolk Four. They were in the service, and they got convicted of rape, and of course categorized it a bunch of time, categorized as sex offenders, and couldn't reverse their cases easily. And even if they did, they're still categorized as sex offenders. They literally stay in their bedrooms. It had nothing. They had nothing to do with the guy who had who is the perpetrator of the crime, is the actual guy that admits guilt, and it can't be undone. It's just a pathetic miscarriage of justice. It's a Frontline episode.
Well, yeah, whatever. I mean that's a law that that basically is misused all the time. It preys on people's emotions. What parent wouldn't want to know about sex offenders living in their neighborhood, but then they fail to define what a sex offender actually is. It could be somebody caught looking at the wrong kind of pictures, or it could be somebody who's convicted of the worst possible crime imaginable. The thing that gets me is that you get these notices. Homeowners get these notices saying, hey, there's a sex offender over there, and you can buy all kinds of rocks and shaving cream and toilet paper for his house at this particular store or whatever. I don't know what it is they expect you to do with that information. But if a murderer gets let out of prison, or an armed robber or somebody like that, and they're living in your neighborhood, you don't find out about that, you know? And
right.
I think that's something that people should be concerned about as well, you know?
Yeah.
Doesn't that make sense?
So you think there should be more of these kinds of notifications?
I'm just saying the logic is flawed from the start. If they really cared, then yes, they would do it for all these other people. No, I think it's a flawed system from the beginning, this just goes to show what they're preying on. Voltaire.
Also, the vast majority of sexual offenses are of, like, minors come from people in the family, and so it's just like an excuse to, instead of adding more social services and bettering society, they just blame the minority of offenders.
Mm-hmm. All right, that's another story we can talk about for a long, long time, but we have other fish to fry. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook. Speak up, please.
Yes, hi. Just wanted to thank you guys for another nice show. About the security, I mean, at the airport, I put through the airport about 3 weeks ago, and I didn't experience that, but I heard on the news, I think it was yesterday or the day before, that some pilots are they're on strike, or they're not going to be, they don't want to go through the this check thing with the scanner and also they pat it down because it apparently affected one of them. But I think the reason why they're patting you down, so they're probably going to do it a certain way to discourage you from going through the pat it down, and they probably want people to go through the x-ray machine more than just the pat it down, because you require more people, and also it's probably less less technological.
Did you say the pilots were objecting to going through the machine?
Yeah, some pilots objecting to be to go through either pat it down, I believe, or either the x-ray. I think it's the pat it down, because one of them was patted down so badly, or you know, it's really it makes you feel I don't know why, but okay, it so, makes you feel like you've been raped or something.
Yeah, let me see if I understand this. Basically, the pilots are being searched for, I guess, weapons or something like that. These are the people that are going to be controlling the airplane and can make it do whatever they want to do, and they're checking them to see if they have anything on them. That doesn't make any sense.
Yes, I was surprised. I was on, I think 2 nights ago, it was in one of the news. Uh-huh. I think it was PBS 13. But, But I have, you know, if they are going to pat you down, if you choose not to go through the X-ray and get patted down, they're probably going to do it in a certain way to discourage you from going through the patted down procedure. Because yeah. They allow you to go through the X-ray, I believe.
Well, thank God we keep those pilots from bringing bombs on board when they're only going to be piloting the damn aircraft in the first place.
Yeah, pilots can't bring bottles of water either.
You're kidding me.
No.
This is what
they
I mean.
They go through the same thing as the rest of it. It's brilliant.
Yeah, it's the whole thing is insane. All right. Let's take another phone call. 212-209-2900. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook. Speak up, please.
Hello.
Hi.
Hey. Hey, guys. It's Carl from Califon.
How you doing?
How you doing? You guys hear about the actress that was stabbed earlier tonight in Central Park?
The what?
The actress, Reese?
No.
I can't remember her name. Reese.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Holy smokes. All right. Hey, you guys, what do you guys charge to haunt the house?
I'm sorry?
How much do you guys charge to haunt the house?
How much do we charge? You know, I think you're in another dimension. I'm not sure why you're even calling us. And certainly that connection could stand some improvement. All right.
People could check out our friend John's research on haunted houses.
Go ahead.
He did an ultrasonic experiment, and Bernie, maybe you know a little more about it in the haunted house that he runs every year. Bernie? We lost Bernie.
Bernie's gone. Look, that button wasn't pressed.
Oh.
Oh, boy.
Hmm.
Well, now you gave out information that you don't have the rest of the information for. You see? That's
his website is Control Geek.
All right. Control Geek dot what?
I don't know.
All right. Well, somebody can find that. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Yes, I'd like to mention that there are a lot of...
Rebel, it's been such a long time since we heard your cheery voice. Where have you been? Everyone's asking about you at the meetings.
Yeah, the meetings, walking into the City Court Center is like...
It really was nice catching up. Let's do this again sometime soon. Let's take another phone call. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Hi.
Hi.
Can I avoid both options by simply getting naked?
That's something you'll have to ask your pastor. We're out of time. Write to us, oth@2600.com. Boy, this has been a fun show. We won't be on next week, unfortunately. We're preempted for a Pacifica National Archive fundraiser, but we will be back in 2 weeks for a special Thanksgiving show. Until then, have a good night.
When John had come again, home again, hurrah, ta-da. He's coming by bus or on the ground, hurrah.
Wow, these guys rock. You know, these guys, you know, that had the show before us, they're off the hook. You know, I tell you, they really are. Oh, yeah. Yep, so besides the fact, I understand there's some wonderful changes happening at WBAI. So, you know, the more things change, the more they remain the same. Wonderful, wonderful. Yes, wonderful, wonderful. Yeah, so you know what? We're going to have a wonderful show here today. This is a very special show coming up. I'm going to surprise you and let you know what it is in a minute. Right, as things just progress the way that they always do. But I can tell you that it is 8 o'clock right now, and you're listening to WBAI New York 99.5 FM. Today is November the 10th, 2010, and that means it's time for the Personal Computer Show. And WBAI, also streaming at WBAI.org. And don't forget to go to the personal computer website, PCRadioShow.org. Take it away.
And I will take it, Stevie. This is Joe King, and welcome to the Personal Computer Show. Hank Key, my co-host, is with me. And from the West Coast, very shortly, we will be getting David Perry, who, as you know, is the Director of Education for Trend Micro. He'll be joining us shortly. Until then, we will get started with Hank telling us what's in the news.
Well, before we go into what's in the news, last week we were talking about a first look at a product called ClearWire. And ClearWire is the ability to have wireless broadband at very high speed. And I like the product. So long as you can get coverage and it's in the area that you need it, I think it's a good product. But then a piece of news came out during the past week, Joe, and this is the part that surprised me. What they did was they took their budget and spent it on promoting the product, and they've done quite a bit on it because I see it in a lot of neighborhood stores. They cut their staff 15%. What does that mean?
It means that while they're getting contracts, they're not yet showing a profit, and they're running out of capital. Now, their biggest shareholder in the company is Sprint, and it's the Sprint network they're building on top of. But as far as building out the 4G aspect of the Wi-Fi, they're going to have to slow down on that.
No, I think my question was slightly a little deeper than that. It says, what can people expect in terms of support if you cut 15% of the staff?
I called into their tech support as a user, and I got excellent tech support. David, have you tried anything with the ClearWire people?
Oh, heck no.
Too advanced for you. You're still using the two tin cans and the string.
No, actually, I'm wired into whatever the company buys. They buy all of my access.
Oh, I see. That's
as an employee who is a full-time communicator, you get all your access picked up, but you get what they're picking up, and they're not interested in experimenting much.
Well, I guess we represent a different spectrum where we have access to what we can get our hands on at some reasonable cost, and so we don't have the T1 you have at home then, right?
I have 20 down, 20 up Fios at home.
I should never mention it, 20 up and 20 down.
It's funny because I have the same Fios that you have, and I'm really terribly, terribly pleased with it. And I'm glad you mentioned it because I want to tell you something I am really very, very, very extremely without comment unhappy about Verizon. Yes, the Fios is nice. But I set one of my browsers to have the home page of Fios. And you know what it does in the middle of the night when I don't really care for it to do that? It gives me a pop under advertisement for Fios where it activates my speakers and so it can talk to me in a very loud voice in the middle of the night.
Joe.
And as a result, I am going around the city telling people, don't use Fios. It's very annoying.
Joe, why don't you just run it in green mode, which is turn it off when you're not using it?
Yeah, I do that.
when
I bought a really great.
How about when I am using it and it activates the speech mode without being asked to?
Well, you're doing a bunch of weird things there. Why are you using the Fios homepage as your homepage?
Normally I don't, but on one of my various browsers I do, because I have to keep in touch with certain things that are happening. And one of the things I'm trying to keep in touch with is what Fios is doing that would annoy me and therefore my listeners. And
you're looking for what would be annoying.
Yes.
And when you find it,
I'm not surprised, but I do report on it. Folks, if you want to really be annoyed by inconsiderate marketing people, use Fios.
Yeah. You could also leave yourself hooked up to America Online in a chat room all night. And people use all kinds of different sounds on their...
Do they? That's annoying also.
Every time this one guy posts, it'll meow and, you know...
Well, I'm used to meows. I live with a bunch
Wasn't that AOL that did that?
That's what he just said. Yeah. You don't listen to our people. You just, you know, you sit back there, you do your own thing. Hank is sitting there smoking his hookah. And,
so, yeah, okay, so here we are. We're on WBAI. Today is the 10th.
Oh, you listened to the beginning of the show, so you got that information from
Stevie.
No,
actually, I was waiting for it to come up officially, 5 o'clock. You know, every time daylight savings comes around, you can drop your clock back another hour in California because we're so far behind the times. Although,
well, not if you have an iPhone 4.
I do have an iPhone 4. And
well, it didn't change your alarms, did it?
You know, it does. iPhone 4 does some really weird things. We can talk about.
No, it doesn't. Steve Jobs wouldn't give you something that does weird things. You're weird for not liking the way your iPhone
if
works.
I am in Europe. Okay, and I accept an appointment. Like if I say yes, I will show up on the personal computer show, and then I get on a plane and fly back to the United States. It is guaranteed to never be able to get the right time for that event. The event will show up 6 hours later, 9 hours earlier. It'll move around. It's unsure about what it wants to do.
Okay, enough of the Hank, what else is new?
Well, since we've been talking about broadband, there was a study released by the Commerce Department, National Telecommunication Information Administration, where they did a survey of 54,000 households, which is a lot, 54,000 households, in October of 2009.
Now, if I took 54,000 households in downtown Little Rock, Arkansas, it wouldn't be very projectable.
No. I'm sure that they did a sampling across the country, and they came up with a number of findings, and one of them is like absolutely no surprise at all. Like 94.1% of households with income exceeding 100,000 have broadband.
Surprise.
And only 35.8% of households with income less than 25,000 have broadband.
People with a household income of less than 25,000, four people, a husband, wife, and two kids, they can't spend their money on broadband.
Now,
jump
in here and make a comment, because as you both know, for reasons we're not going to discuss on the air, I know many people at that end of the income spectrum.
Which one, the up or the down?
Both, actually. Okay. But I know a lot of people on the downside because they're just starting out in life or just restarting out in life. And from those people that I know, a lot of them don't have broadband. But you know what they do? They go to the public library.
How do they spell library?
Yeah, well, where I live, we still have them.
No,
and where you live, they still have them.
Yes, they do.
And you know, you guys probably even know the names of those two lions.
I do, but actually, they opened up a branch library just two blocks from my home. And I hang out there whenever I can, because one of the things that library does is you can sit in any of their lovely chairs and access their network at no charge.
David, do you know that in the United States, the busiest library?
No.
In Flushing.
Really?
Yes.
Is in Flushing.
Yes, and if you don't get
along
there,
with all the Chinese restaurants.
Yes, if
you could have one from Column A and Reed Proust at the same time.
Well, let me put it this way: if you don't, when the library opens, if you don't get there within a certain amount of time, it's sitting room only on the floor.
You know what's interesting, Hank? My little local library that just opened up has upstairs a whole very large room reserved for teenagers, adolescents. I went in there one day because there was nobody in there, and I said to the librarian who's stationed there, do you really mean that on the sign? I can't sit here and read. And he said, I'm sorry, sir. This room is reserved. I said, well, when does it get busy? He said, well, we had hoped it would get busy after school, which would be around 3 o'clock, but it doesn't.
No.
It doesn't get busy. I said, who knows that it's here besides me? I just found it by accident. They don't have any money to promote the fact that it is there.
Now, one of the big surprises, David, and I sent this to you, is that they quoted that 77% of Asian households have broadband.
What percent?
77% Asian American households have broadband.
Without regard to?
Without regard to income.
Economics.
Okay? 68% of non-Hispanic whites and 49% of Afro-American households and 47% of Hispanic households.
None of it has to do, you're saying none of that has to do with economics. That's just a broad.
And when they said that they were, say, they looked at it from an economic point of view, those numbers are still the same.
Interesting. Very interesting.
That one really surprised me.
So when did it get down to the low level of 25,000 income?
Well, we
know that there is a connection there between the socio and the economic, between the ethnic and the economic. So go ahead, Hank.
I was very surprised by that. And I guess, you know, as the speed gets to be more readily available, higher speed like 4G, and prices come down and there's more competition, hopefully it'll be more like 99% of all households will be on high-speed broadband.
I don't want to be dramatic about it, but I think that we should get up to the same level that Korea is up to, or Japan is up to, or Finland is up to.
First of all, you have to understand that their rates are cheaper.
Yes, well, there's a reason for that.
There's no competition. No, seriously. Like I thought
competition was good for rates.
It's supposed to be, but actually, if you really think about it, we really don't have competition in the United States because, like where I live and where you live, it's either Time Warner or none at all. I can't get Comcast. I can't get
Excuse me. It's either Time Warner or Verizon or Dish Network.
Why do you say no?
Those are the people who in my building have competition. You're pointing at Stevie, but I don't know why, because he's not even listening to the show.
Well, you know, I'm going to say something stupid, and, you know.
All right.
Well, you always say something stupid, but you never say anything as stupid as Marty Winston does. And, you know, Marty has this series, and I'm going to just mention it once again. If you who are listening to the show right now can think of something really stupid that you want to have Marty comment on, send it to the PC Radio at pcradioshow.org, and if Marty uses your idea of what's stupid, if he agrees with you that it's stupid, you'll get a boogie board. Now, I bet you don't even know what a boogie board is. Stevie, let's see
really
what Marty
stupid.
Has to
with
say.
With all due respect to the police, some of their departments aren't very bright about lights. I'm talking specifically about those flashing lights you never want to see in your rearview mirror. The trade term for them is light bars. The police nickname for them is busy bars, but not because you may so often see them outside busy bars in the popular tavern sense of the phrase. The nickname, of course, is because the police turn them on when they're busy at a specific task, whether pursuit or enforcement. The stupid part of busy bars is that so many of them are still using Edison-era technology, bulbs with filaments, often in conjunction with motors. Those emergency vehicles, and we, would be a lot better off to use the new LED light bar alternatives for several reasons. One is that an old-style busy bar is hard on the patrol car's battery. Cops can't turn the car off and keep the lights running without needing a jump start. And just in case you care about breathing, an idling police cruiser burns about half a
and now it's all gone silent.
I don't know.
Marty?
Stevie, I think something went wrong. We lost the connection to Marty or something.
We'll
have to get back to that. And, folks, I apologize for that. Stevie is learning his trade now, and, you know, sometimes he slips up a little bit. Hank, you know.
Oh, yeah, blame Stevie.
You understand. Got to understand, David. I could blame you, but you'd complain. I could blame Hank, but he'd complain. I can blame Stevie, and he just sits there and stares at me.
No, but you got to understand that Stevie's qualifying for the Apprentice show.
I don't understand that, but I do understand that there used to be a thing in the electronics and home electronics business called Black Friday, and Black Friday was supposedly the day when retailers in home electronics broke even. They turned into the black for the first time. They were out of the red for the first time.